Hallo Christina.
Hallo Roberto.
Na, heute werden wir gleich zu Beginn in Englisch switchen,
Warum?
oder? Naja, weil wir heute eine englische Episode haben und
Stimmt.
deswegen switchen wir gleich jetzt ins
Hallo
Englische.
Roberto.
Hallo Christina, so I will ask you today in English.
Okay.
My love,
Nun.
how do you feel? Defective or excellent?
Today I feel excellent, Roberto. You
Why?
can imagine.
I can imagine. Why? What's happened?
What's happened? The last 3 days I was in Stockholm, Sweden, with my daughter. She invited me for that trip. That was a
Okay.
birthday present. And it's so nice to be traveling to a place I never been before and never knew, Sweden or Stockholm. And it's every time for me so great to be in other countries and other cities and to see the people, feel the people and the vibe there.
Did you see
And
the royals?
no,
You
no,
didn't
no,
saw
no,
them?
no. We
You didn't
only
see
see the
them?
flag on the house of them, but not the king. But it's okay for me. That's not why I want to go to Stockholm. But what it feel excellent for me today is that I every time come very well, and I loved it to come back to Berlin. So I'm back and I'm happy to be here.
Nice. I'm happy that you are here again in Berlin. Very, very nice.
Thank you, Roberto. And what's about you? How do you feel
Oh,
today?
yeah,
Defective or excellent?
I feel really defective
Oh.
today. That's why, because I have two reasons.
Okay.
The first reason is because it is our penultimate episode of the second season
Ah,
today.
okay, yeah.
Yeah. And because I don't know how I can surrender in this wonderful episode today without controlling my fears to speak English, you know?
Wow, fishing for
And no, it's
compliments.
not, it's not. It's really, it's always a big challenge. So that's why I feel a little bit defective. But we have today a very special guest. That's why we speak English in our episode today, with the title Between Control and Surrender. And we will talk with, please say welcome to Derek Anthony Young. Hi, nice to meet you, and nice that you are here.
I'm glad to
Hi.
be here. Thank
Hi,
you.
hi, Derek. How do you feel?
Defective or excellent?
I feel excellent.
Excellent.
Yes.
You want to tell us why?
I purpose to stay in a state of peace in my life, and I allow life to be as it comes, and I try my best to learn from it. And so I know that so much of life is bigger than me. And
Okay.
so, because of that,
You feel
I feel
excellent.
excellent. Oh, I like
But now we
that.
want to hear who is
Yes,
Derek Anthony Young.
yeah. Derek Anthony Young. He is for 3 days in Berlin only,
Yes.
but has time to talk with us. Thank you so much. We are all delighted for that.
My pleasure.
And I want to talk a little bit about you. You are in your best ages, in the mid-50s, right?
Late 50s.
Yeah, I won't be charmed. Okay. And you live currently in New York City,
Yes.
but most of the time you travel around the world, right?
Yes.
You are born and raised in Chicago, Illinois.
Yes.
And you have until now three major careers.
I've had three major careers, yes.
Right?
Yes.
And the first is to be a dance teacher and vocal coach. And
choreographer.
Thank you.
Is it the right pronounce?
Choreographer.
Choreographer. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Maya. It's too complicated for me. And you directed and produced many shows in LA and Miami and New York City. Is that right?
No, I did most of my shows in some of the East and like in the East, like Detroit and the Midwest.
Okay.
And I did some work in California.
I like California. And you do all that until the age of 35,
around
right?
35. Yes, around 35. Yes.
Around. Okay. And the second career is be a vice president of a major bank for 10 years.
Yes.
I like that shift. Wow. In LA and New York, is that right?
Yes, in Los Angeles and in New York.
Okay. And after that 10 years, you are an art figure model. Pose for drawings, painters, and sculpture artists. And you do this a little bit more around the world, in Netherlands.
I did mostly in New York, but I also did some work in Paris. And I did
Paris,
work at William de Kooning mm-hmm. Art School in Rotterdam.
In Rotterdam. Okay. And then something changed in your life, I think. That's my impression. In some caregiving. Nowadays, you are a life coach and a spiritual guide.
Yes.
For 12 years, I
12
think.
Years now, yes. Internationally, 12 years.
And all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
That means you travel all around the world.
Yes.
And you want to connect the spiritual side of people with the everyday side of the people. Is that
yes.
right?
Yes. Yes, how the two work hand in hand.
Okay, that's, I want to say, of your bio. I think we will talk a little bit more of other things, but that's for the first step.
Wow, what a bio. And my first questions about it is, because, you know, I'm an actor, and so I want to hear from you. Because you work, like we heard, for a long time in the show business.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to hear from you if, how was this time? How was this time in the show business? And do you miss something about it?
Well, show business began for me at 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Chicago, in a professional children's choir, world known children's choir called the Chicago Children's Choir. We often competed. We had competitions with the Vienna Boy Choir.
Ah, okay.
And we sang in 14 different languages.
Ooh!
Wow!
Because we are in Germany. My senior recital, I did a song called Die Nacht.
Die Nacht.
Yes.
Can you sing something about it?
I cannot remember. That was too many years ago.
Okay.
But you know, I learned. You know, so I started in class, mostly classical music. All classical music, and then as I got into high school, we did more show choir music. And I went on to college, continued in voice, did voice, and then at some point I had a transition. I've always had these visions of dance, creating dance, but I never had any training.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to change my career from music. And I went into dance education. And I joined a dance company. I auditioned and joined a dance company at the university where I went, which was Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana. Which is actually is probably the best school of music in the nation.
Mm-hmm.
Even over Juilliard. I don't know if you've heard of Juilliard.
Mm-hmm.
Juilliard. So Juilliard and Indiana are like right on the edge.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Being that you're both in music and theater. Have you ever heard of the opera Porgy and Bess?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, the original Bess from Porgy and Bess was my voice teacher.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yes. Camilla Williams.
Ooh.
Yes.
Camilla Williams.
Camilla Williams was my voice teacher at Indiana University.
Okay.
So she was a diva.
Uh-huh.
And I studied with her in voice before I changed to dance education.
So. In voice and then being a diva, or only study in voice? She was, or you learned to be a
well,
diva?
Well, she was just a diva. And it was really, you know, you had to be on point to work with her. I was really glad to actually have a chance to work with such a prestigious person.
Yeah.
But then I switched over, like I said, to dance education, and I studied ballet, jazz, modern. And something happened. All of a sudden, as I started training in dance, all these visions I had as a little child about creating dance started to explode. And I actually became more excited about creating dance than even dancing. And I actually became, I mean, even though I was very good at dancing, I became a better choreographer because I had all these visions in my head. Mm-hmm. And now that I was trained, or that I, as I was training, I was able to put to action what I was seeing in my head. And so I did a series of competitions and on the campus, and won a series number of competitions and such, and was one of the first students to be called upon to actually choreograph for the theater department at the university, which they normally just had professors do that.
Yeah.
And we were doing the show Company, which is now the revival on Broadway right now. And that was the first show that I ever choreographed for the university.
For the university, okay. Okay.
So, yeah, so I did that all, you know, and I basically, you know, went the rest of my years in dance education, you know, studying. We actually even did, you've heard of the Pointer Sisters, right?
Yeah.
There was, the Indiana Lottery was beginning, and they were introducing it to the world. And so they called in the Pointer Sisters to come in and do, you know, I'm so excited. So we did, I was actually hired to be on a video with the Pointer Sisters for that commercial to introduce the Indiana Lottery.
Okay.
That was fun.
We can't find it in the...
Oh, I've looked for it. I've looked for it, and I can't even find it. But
okay.
But one of the things I did do is you may have heard of Pops and Symphony Orchestras.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Boston Pops, and there's the Cincinnati Pops. Those are the two biggest in the United States.
Okay.
At that time, the conductor of the Cincinnati Pops, whose name was Eric Konzo, basically hired me to start choreographing for the Cincinnati Pops.
Mm-hmm.
So that gave me another leg of experience to choreograph numbers for a symphony, a Pops orchestra, and to dance in the midst of that.
Okay.
So you were very happy in it?
I was very excited.
Working as a choreographer?
I was like almost overworked because I choreographed at like five high schools in the community. I had my own dance studio. I was teaching a lot of pregnant mothers and teaching people to dance. I had a little troupe that we traveled around. And then I was also doing work for this famous conductor, Eric Konzo, who was known in America at the time. He was known as the Prince of the Pops.
Mm-hmm.
But So I was doing a lot. And I also had a lot of experience doing operas. So I performed. I was in a collegiate group that we did a lot of operas, and so it was a wide range of, you know. And I did a couple of shows where I got the rights from New York. Like Ain't Misbehavin' was a show that I did that was on Broadway, and I directed, produced, and choreographed that show for the university. So.
And why did you stop to do this?
I'm going to a bank. Sorry.
Well, the next career was the bank.
Well, the bank thing was actually kind of a fluke. It was kind of happened by chance. While I was in college, you know, college was not cheap, and you have to get. Even though I was working as a choreographer and going to school, I wanted to get a job, and I did not want to do food service jobs. My best friend at the time got a job at a local bank as a bank teller, which was like a very low-end job. And I said, so I went and I applied, and I got a bank job as a teller. But I did that part-time while I did all my other stuff.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So it gives you experience. In the United States, when you work at a bank, it's like your door in to anything. You're just trusting. Yeah. At least that's the way it was back in the 80s, 90s when I was doing banking. If you worked in a bank, you were trusted and you could basically get a job. If you had bank on your resume, there's no one that wouldn't hire you. And so when I left Indiana after doing all my career in the arts and school, I moved out to Los Angeles. I needed to get a job. Mm-hmm. So I applied at Wells Fargo Bank, which is one of the largest banks.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I honor that. Honor that bank because I learned so much, not just for life, but even spiritually in that bank. Mm-hmm. And I was hired as a teller. But the day I was hired as a teller, they were so short-staffed, they threw me on what was called the platform where the desks are. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to be a teller doing the cash. Mm-hmm. They put me out and said, you're going to open new accounts.
Whoa.
I had no training. I had no experience. I didn't know what I was doing. I was sitting in the back of the office. But as I clicked in, because I put my theater and choreographic skills to work. Because I was always an entrepreneur, always active, always finding out what the guidance was and just doing it, being proactive. And what ended up happening, within 3 months, my first 3 months, I became the number one customer service rep in all of Southern California. Ooh. And that's what started the promotions coming.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And so that happened, I got awards for that and then started, you know, the promotions. I went from customer service rep to another position. And then within 2.5 years, I was a vice president.
Well,
and it's just by applying myself. And I will say this, because it was true. I did not finish my college degree. I was one semester away when I left to move to Los Angeles.
Oh.
I said, I'm done. I'm done. I was at Indiana from 1982 and I left in 91.
Mm-hmm.
And I did part-time and I didn't always go full-time. But in 91, I said, okay, my spirit, the spirit that guides me said, it's time to go.
Okay.
And I packed up my duds. Everything stopped. All my work with Eric Kunzel, all the things I was doing just stopped.
Stop.
I had no more shows, no more offers, no more nothing. And it was time to move to Los Angeles. Now, of course, I had the vision of moving to Los Angeles to become a star. To become a star. And
So you worked with with the spirit that we talked them after mm-hmm. after to talk about the time with who is longer away.
Mm-hmm.
This connection with your spirit, it's really a long relationship that you have.
Yeah, it started when I was 16. It has nothing to do with religion.
16. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing
mm-hmm.
to do with family. Mm-hmm. Nothing to do with religion. Nothing to do with anything organized. It was a one-on-one connection between me and the divine.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And
whoa.
And at that time, you had to finish that way and look for another after the bank.
Well, I went to the bank. I mean, When I went to California, I applied at the bank and got the job and started the promotion, started to happen. Yeah. But I had my eye on choreographing and dancing. And I got a few little jobs here and there, but nothing, you know, and I was like, you know, and it's funny. I noticed that as I kept getting the promotions in banking, mm-hmm. I kept shrugging my shoulders like, another promotion. I was like annoyed by it.
Mm-hmm.
Most people would be like, come on. And I remember the day that I had a photo shoot and I was ready to leave the bank and go out and hit the pavement and really become successful with my photos and everything. And I had a little incident where I was coming home from the bank and I picked up my photos and my everything and I was mugged.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, the only thing that was missing were my photos and I had tickets to, I don't know if you've ever heard of Alvin Ailey. Ailey is a dance company.
Yeah, yeah,
I had tickets to Alvin Ailey and I had my photos and everything else was still in my bag. My checkbook, all of that stuff, because back then we didn't have the ATM cards back then. But my photos and my tickets, anything connected to the arts was gone. And I cried like a baby. I was like, oh my God, I was ready, so ready. Because, you know, you have a, when you're ready to go. And you And the next day I went to work. My boss didn't know what I'd gone through. I wasn't like badly hurt or anything like that. But it was just a shock to my system. My boss comes to me and says, Derek, I'm looking for branch managers. And you're number one on my list. Mm. And I'm like... I don't want to do this. I mean, I most people would be like so excited.
You
to
told
be,
him.
I didn't say that to him.
Way, no.
No. I said this to myself inside. I was like, you know, and he went, and then that's when things happened. And I'm next thing I know, I was opening a brand new office for the bank, and I got a position, and you know, and I got my VP title, and I got a new car because I'd never learned to drive until then. I was 33 years old, and I hadn't driven. And I moved, I don't know if you've ever heard of Bel Air. I moved to Bel Air.
Yeah.
I was living in Bel Air, working in West Hollywood, VP title. I had everything. And I was like, but I don't have the arts. I learned to surrender. And the day I surrendered to the arts.
Yeah.
And I mean, the way I surrendered, letting the arts go for that time period and accepted what was going on in the banking, you know how you get it? We had voice messages back then. And I came home one day and I had a voice message. I don't know if you know this person, but she's very famous in the United States. Debbie Allen.
Debbie Allen.
She was over Fame, the TV show Fame.
Yeah.
The movie. Yeah. She was the director. She was the director and choreographer in the show, in the movie, and for the show.
Ah,
Debbie Allen also choreographed the Oscars.
Okay.
And so she was my icon. She was who I wanted to be because she was singer, actor, dancer, producer, director, choreographer. She did everything.
Mm-hmm.
And she's still going strong today. But you know, she produced movies. She did everything. And every year she was choreographing the Oscars. She was who I wanted to be. And one day I get home and I had a message on my machine. Hi, Derek. This is Debbie Allen. Can you give me a call when you get this message? I thought all my friends were, somebody was pranking me. I knew someone was pranking me.
Ah, okay.
I said, someone. Yeah. So I called the number back and this guy answered the phone. I said, hi, I got a call from Debbie Allen. And he said, oh, just a moment. And then she says, hi, this is Debbie. And I'm like, is this the Debbie Allen? She says, it is, baby. I don't have much time. What do you want? I said, you called me and left the message on my machine. I'm Derek. Oh, yeah, baby. It was always baby. She always said, oh, yeah, baby. She says, I'm working on a project. And I want to know if you could come and take part of it.
Oh.
And I'm like, yeah. She said, okay, I'll give the phone back to my assistant. He'll give you the details. I was like choking on my own saliva. Like, what is going on? D. Debbie Allen called me on my phone. I think I kept that message for at least 2 years before I got rid of it.
Yeah.
But then I found out how, because I didn't know how this happened. My older sister who worked for a radio station, Debbie happened to be on air that day talking about a project she was working on. And my sister ran after her after the project. Now, I'm sure Debbie gets this all the time. But she ran after her and said, my brother loves you. He thinks the world of you. For whatever reason, Debbie took my number. But I understand Debbie's like that. Debbie Allen does that. And she's done that in most of her career. Mm-hmm. She took my number and she called me. What this project was, I don't know if you've ever heard of the movie Amistad. It was a movie by Steven Spielberg.
Yeah. Ah. Right.
It was about slavery and the slavery ships that come over. Well, Debbie Allen was one of the producers on that movie.
Ah. Okay.
And she was also doing all the still photos to prepare the director for the scenes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so she pulled together a bunch of dancers and actors at her private studio in her home.
Yeah.
And I was invited to be part of this. All the people that were there were all stars. They were all people in videos, in TV commercials, movies. I was nobody. So that was, but what that did for me, actually, it caused me to finally surrender to the spirit about the arts because I did nothing to make that happen.
Yeah, sure. You didn't make nothing.
And the spirit showed me when you surrender, that's when it falls into place.
Okay.
But you, in this case, you surrender.
I surrendered letting go of running after the arts.
Yeah.
Hitting the pavement and trying to get ahead in the arts. and focusing on what was in front of me, which was the banking. And you know what miraculously happened? After that incident with Debbie Allen, everything in the arts came across my desk as a vice president of the bank.
Okay.
Right after that, I had a client who ran one of the biggest theaters in LA, came to me, and he said, Derek, we're trying to fill up our opening nights of all the opening mm-hmm. nights where they have all the stars come.
Yeah.
Can I give you anywhere from 100 to 200 tickets that you can give to clients? I'll make sure that you have house seats too. And so for the next 4 years, every show from Broadway that came to LA, I partook in. And I was a part of it.
Wow.
So yeah, it helped me to surrender my angst to get into the arts, because I knew if my spirit and if my God wanted me to be there, he will open those doors.
So you
but
think...
But you have a very good relationship to your sister that said she can do
well,
that.
Yeah, she was always... You know, she always saw when she saw an opportunity, she ran after it.
Ah, okay. So, yeah,
that was her way. is her way. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you think we all have to accept what life given to us and to do the best of it. So and not to go against this and to try to make something different that life shows us?
What I've learned in this journey, and I try to help people to realize, is that, yes, life does present to us. And we may have a vision of what we would like.
Yeah.
But the journey to that place might be all over the place. You might have to take 10 steps back and do something you don't expect to do to end up doing what you want to do. Because we should always, in most cases, especially when we feel peaceful, walk through each door that opens up. Every door that opens up, I think it's important, of course, to assess. We have to have a state of peace. If we don't feel peaceful, walk away. That's to me the signal that it's going as well. If you mm-hmm. don't feel at peace about what you're doing, and you know if you feel at peace, then you should probably walk away from it. But mm-hmm. if the door swings open, often it's an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And we can learn. I really believe in life there are no things called errors. And I say that because if we are learning, it's not an error.
That's right, yeah.
If we don't learn, then it's an error.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But if we are learning and growing, there's no such thing as error.
And we can learn from every situation in life.
Any situation, good, bad, ugly, or otherwise,
we need all that situation. We can't have life always happy.
Well, life, that's not reality.
Mm-hmm.
There must be balance.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with what people don't do is that we're caught off guard for the difficulties. But just like there's, we have in America, earthquake preparedness, mm-hmm. tornado preparedness, we need to have trouble preparedness. We need to prepare for trouble. Because it's like we learned something in banking about robberies. It's not, they always tell us, it's not if you are robbed, it's when. It's mm-hmm. when you are robbed. It's not about if you're going to get robbed. You need to come in every day knowing that a robber will walk through that door.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we need to get up every morning knowing that trouble's going to hit us.
Mm-hmm.
But certain entities try to force us to think that everything's going to be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we love that, but that's not reality.
I have a question that I don't thought before, but so you don't believe in career coaches, or you know, in my case, in the actor there are lots of coaches,
yeah.
Career coaches
mm-hmm.
who works with you, who show you, or he wanna give you advices how you become famous or mm-hmm. how you become a good working actor. Mm-hmm. You don't believe in this way to work,
coaches are important. I'm a coach,
yeah.
I'm a coach for life. I'm a coach in life itself. So guidance and coaches are crucial to life, because people have had experiences that others have not gone through and new things that they can learn. So a coach is always important, I think.
They're important. But yes. You think you can also plan a career on the table? Can you plan a career on the table?
Plan? And say, you mean like,
plan, yeah, plan. You're like, so this is the steps that you have to do, and then you have to do this step, and then this step, and then you get on the top of your wishes.
Well, but you yeah. may, okay, anyone can set up a plan. The thing I think it's important is no matter what we plan, there are always going to be hiccups. Hiccups are difficulties and problems.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So no matter what your plan is, something's going to happen. That's just life. That's not being pessimistic. That's just being realistic. There's always going to be challenges. There's always going to be difficulties. And we need to learn to prepare for those difficulties. And that's what we need to spend our time on, is preparing that there's going to be challenges. You know, what I used to do with my staff in the banking, I would say, okay, guys, the curtain's getting ready to go up, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and there are going to be challenges. There are going to be people that don't like something or don't want something or aren't happy with something. We need to prepare for that. And we need to know we're here to help solve problems,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in the banking, that's what we're here.
Yeah,
we're
yeah,
here
yeah.
to solve
sure.
problems.
Yeah, yeah.
So that means the problems are going to come. So don't get annoyed. Don't get frustrated. Don't get, you know,
when the problem comes,
pissed off,
because this is a part of the life.
This is what we do. This is what we do. So.
Yeah, but you prepare that you have to control that challenge. Huh?
Well, it's not about controlling the challenge. It's in that situation like that. It's about guiding, because often, sometimes we don't have always a solution for everything, but sometimes you want to make, in banking, for example, you want to give off to the customer that instead of just saying, no, that's our policy.
Mm-hmm.
I always tell my staff, get away from, because policies can be broken.
Yeah.
So you want to give off to them this idea that you are helping them solve their problem. You're looking for solutions. You're looking for opportunities to say yes. You're looking for ways to be positive, even though you might end up having to say we can't do it. You might end up doing something else that will pacify them mm-hmm. until they get what they need.
Okay, but that's for the customer. But for your own life, you have also to control your life to be prepared for some challenges or not?
Well,
or surrender and nothing think about yourself, only to other.
Well, depending on whatever our career is, we learn from circumstances and people.
Yeah.
So we learn from the people that waltz into our life.
Yeah, sure.
That's my dancer part of me, waltz. They waltz into our lives, and so we learn from them. And we, as we grow, we have to learn, you know, what is good and what's not good, and how to keep the negative out of our space. Say, I don't want that.
Yeah.
I choose
sure.
not to have that.
Yeah.
And there's a way also to remove that energy, is not allow that energy to fill you up. Because when you don't let that negative energy fill you up, people stop before they get to you because they realize, oh, that person doesn't tolerate drama. And they mm-hmm. just, they figure out and go somewhere else.
Okay, I understand that.
So if you don't, and it's all about our perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So much about our perspective and how we perceive things,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and mm-hmm. And that's in any aspect of living. Excuse me. But now as a life coach and as a guide, as a spiritual guide, you know, I'll just say real briefly is that human beings, whether people, and this has nothing to do with religion on any level, most people will believe and accept that we are a threesome. We are a body, a soul, and a spirit. And even though people may not understand what all that is, most people will agree that that is true, even though they may not. Because the biggest question, what's the difference between the soul and the spirit? That's what most people ask, which there is a difference between the two. But what I try to do is I try to help people, and I always say the body is the body. You know, it basically, people either treat the body good or they treat the body bad. But one way or the other, they are treating the body.
Yeah, what do they treat? Alcohol and cigarettes.
Whatever they treat it with, they're treating it good. Either people are taking good care of their body or they're not. But in one way or the other, they're focusing on the body.
Yeah.
Even if it's bad, they're still focusing on it.
Mm-hmm.
The soul is basically a combination of the heart and the mind.
Yeah.
And as most know in science, that it's said that most, you know, we only can basically access up to about 10% of our mental capacity. This is getting very deep, but you know, it's about the same with the heart.
Mm-hmm.
To you know, that we can only access only so much.
Mm-hmm.
But both of those are human aspects. But then we have the spirit, which is the part we cannot see. That's the part that, and most people say, well, what does that mean? They'll say, well, everybody gets a gut reaction about something. They get a feeling about something. They can't see it. They can't touch it. But they know that it's real and that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to decide what they're going to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I do basically, is trying to help people to connect to the spiritual part of themselves.
Okay. But I want to understand about the break between the life of in the bank and the artist, and then to the coach. What happened in that time?
Well, I went from banking, I came to a point where at the end of my banking time, in LA, I was guided to just leave, to resign.
Yeah, sure.
I had a lot of success with the bank, and then I traveled a little bit to Australia, and then I came to New York. I did banking for 1 year. And I had an incredible success. I opened a brand new office and we had this customer service whole thing going on. And I told, they wanted everybody to be at a certain score, and the top score was 7, perfect
mm-hmm.
score.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a brand new office, which is very difficult when you're running a brand new office because you have mm-hmm. new customers. I told my executives, my branch is going to get a perfect score. And they said, they laughed at me and said, Derek, not going to happen. You're in Scarsdale, which is a very affluent community,
mm-hmm.
you know, you are a minority. There are going to be complaints. It's just going to be natural. I said, my branch is going to get a perfect score. And they all laughed at me, thought I was crazy. So I went to work in my spirit and with my staff, and I worked extremely hard. And about a month or two later, I got a call from the president of the bank. You are the first branch ever to reach a perfect 7.
Wow. And but what's the hard work about? What do you
know? Well, you have to make sure everyone is on the same page. Your staff have to all be saying
okay.
the same
mm-hmm.
thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
customers will get confused. So I monitored that like,
like
militant. I was like, so we're going to all say the same thing. We're all going to, you know, we're all going to make sure that we treat the customer right. If your colleague's not doing it right, jump in, help them out, whatever the case is.
Ah.
And so, because, you know, we didn't know who was going to report on our service. But I ended up getting a perfect 7. And 30 days later, I resigned.
Wow.
And I left.
And you worked like a coach with the staff.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And I,
mm-hmm.
so I left the bank because I was told in my spirit something new was coming. And I got an opportunity to become a super in a, basically managing an apartment building, living
mm-hmm.
rent-free in New York City.
Whoa.
And it came, and I left banking. Everybody thought it was crazy to leave banking. I left banking to go become a full-time super, live rent-free in New York City.
Yeah.
And that's when I actually started art modeling.
I just want to ask you.
The art modeling did start before, because I was looking for banking when I first got to New York. Nobody would hire me because I'd come across the country
uh-huh.
and no one was going to hire me. And I went 6 months trying to find banking, and no one would hire me. And then a friend told me at the gym, you have a nice body. Maybe you should do some art modeling. I said, take my clothes off? I said, I would never do something like that. I was very prudish.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Never say never.
Yeah.
And so when I could not find a job, I went into that office, to the modeling office, nervous as ever. And I said, can you tell me more about this art modeling? He said, yeah, I need you to take your clothes off first. Because it was nude modeling. They needed to look at you and
okay.
see you.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And he said, can you start tomorrow?
Whoa.
And when you had 6 months of rejection
yeah.
as a vice president of a
yeah.
bank and couldn't
yeah.
get a job, and here's the first opportunity.
Yeah.
So I did that. And I was kind of bitter at banks at that time, I was mad because nobody would hire me. Mm-hmm. And after I did the modeling for about 2 months, that's when this other bank contacted me.
Okay.
It's always, repeat
and I was like,
the same.
Yeah. And so, you know, but you want to know why I decided to take the bank job? Because I was working
at DC Money.
Because I wanted to stop sitting in the balcony on Broadway shows. And I wanted to sit in the orchestra. So I said, my salary is going to go up 3 times more. Mm-hmm. I'll be able to sit in the orchestra on Broadway. Mm-hmm. And that was really why I took the bank job. Yep. But I did it for that year.
I don't believe that, but I think.
Yeah. Okay. And so, but yeah, I took it because it was, you know, I wanted, because I was content with the modeling at the time. But then when I left the banking, I realized I'd already had the experience as a model.
Yeah.
For 2 months, because I stopped modeling for the year that I did the bank in New York.
Yeah, I think it's better.
And
for
then
that.
I decided, okay, I'm living rent free. I don't have to pay rent in New York City. I'll go be an art model. So everything I make will go in my pocket, because basically you live in New York to pay rent.
But why you left the bank? I don't know.
I left the bank after I did the customer service scoring and everything. The spirit told me it's time. It was
now.
I did 1 year. I did nine years in LA.
And 1 year then.
And I decided I wanted to also begin to travel a little bit. And I'd never been to Europe.
Okay.
And so I, you know.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's what a life. Yes.
But what does an art model do? What kind of talents needs an art model?
If you are a dancer, an actor, a singer, anything in the arts like that, performing arts, those are the types of models they really want, because those are artistic people are people that are creative, and in art schools they want you to be able to take creative poses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even a singer has to stand in a certain position. Mm-hmm. So you can do standing poses, you can do seated poses, you can do reclining poses.
Always naked?
Well, 90% of the work in the art world is nude.
Is nude.
And if you want to be successful as an art model, you're going to do nude work.
And you can earn lots of money.
I was able for the next 10 years. I traveled the world. I traveled a lot, and it was really lucrative for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. A lot of people look at art modeling as a side job, and it is that for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But there are some models who do it as a career, and I did it as a career.
I didn't know that before.
Well, but I also had a little secret thing going on, because. Okay. When I started art modeling, there were very few models of color.
Mm-hmm.
There were some female, but there were hardly any male models of color. And I had three things going for myself. I was a model of color, I was muscular, and I had a shaved head, because that was great for when they were teaching about the skull. And teaching about the head and everything. Mm-hmm. So they loved that, because the hair would always get in the way.
Yeah.
So because of those three things, I got so much work. Now, what ended up happening halfway through my time as an art model, I became an assistant model coordinator, which was also part of helping hire models.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I was able to use my choreographic skills to show them how to hire models and to do auditions and all of that.
Okay.
And so I showed them that, and it became one of the biggest modeling auditions in the country, actually. But as a model, you model for 20 minutes. You model for 20 minutes, and you have a 5-minute break. 20 minutes, 5-minute break.
The whole day long.
Yeah, and most classes are 3 hours. Some classes are 6 hours. So that's, you know, I was getting so much work, I had to turn work down. A good model would get about 12 to 15 hours a week. That was for a good model. If you're a good model, and I was getting anywhere from 50 to 60 hours a week.
Wow.
Hmm.
And let me know, please, in the time you're sitting there, pose and wait that the others do something on their paper or
painting,
what they do, painting or whatever. What are you thinking in that time? In the Is it time for you?
You have to be you have to learn to be content in your own head for hours.
Yeah.
If you're not, you'll go crazy.
Yeah, I think so.
So what I did in the beginning, I would, because I was a theatrical musical person, I would sing through musical scores in my head. And it would pass the time tremendously.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But then as I continued to do the modeling, it became a very spiritual and meditative time for me.
Mm-hmm.
Very meditative time for me in that context.
But as you can't lose your...
No, you have, you have to, when you get used to it, you know to focus, you pick a point and you stay in that pose.
You meditate.
Like, yeah. And, well, I didn't meditate with my eyes closed. I just, you know, I just stayed still. Because I don't believe meditation is about position. I believe meditation is about heart. People in the yoga world, that's fine. I don't knock any of that. But for me, when you're meditating or when you're praying, the people like to get away from that word, but I use it. Prayer meditation is not a... Religion has made it about your position and your words and your this. And your,
on your knees.
There's nothing to do with it. You could be hanging like a bat because the spirit listens to hearts, not position.
Yeah,
not
sure.
Position and not words.
Mm-hmm.
So,
By the way, the heart that you say, you told to me the mind is always about control and the heart is always about surrender.
Yes.
You more you surrender, the more freedom you get.
Absolutely.
You told me that. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, to say it very simple, we have to follow the heart always.
The heart will always lead us in the right direction.
Sure.
It will always lead us in the right direction.
If you hear of your heart or not.
Well, if you're not controlled by this, by the mind.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. If you're not controlled by the mind. Mm-hmm. The mind has its place.
Mm-hmm.
And it has its part.
Yeah.
But, and many people will disagree with this because they're very mental people. They're very focused on control. So they're like, oh, don't follow the heart. Let me stay away from the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know this from all the years I've been in my spiritual journey. If you're interested in being close to the divine is interested in your heart, not your mind.
Okay.
And the mind is sort of like the follow-up to organize things for the heart. It's just there to help organize and structure things because the heart can be emotional.
Yeah.
And the mind is there to keep order. But the mind should never be in the driver's seat. The mind should be passenger. The heart should always drive.
The heart drives. This is so beautiful.
The heart should always be the driver.
It's so beautiful because it's absolutely so, I feel this, the absolutely opposite of what we live.
In this time, more than ever,
with this pandemic,
in
the pandemic, and so show us that that is not right to follow the heart, but we have to know what it's happened with the virus and everything.
Well,
so more than ever, we are in a society. So I feel it, and not only in Europe. I don't know because you travel all over the world, so you can say if it's different in other countries. But in Europe, it's more than ever. It's you have to think, you have to know, it has to be proof that it is like this and this. The heart and what you feel, it's not so important.
Well, the heart is connected to what we call the gut.
The what?
The gut, the instinct.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
The heart is connected to that. The mind is not.
Yeah.
The heart is connected to that, and the instinct is connected to our spirit. And the spirit is connected to the divine. So that's why when we listen to our instinct, we can't usually see anything. We have no evidence. We just know. it's even greater than just feeling. We just know something.
Yeah.
And that is the supernatural, spiritual part of every human being. Mm-hmm. And that is what is connected to the heart. And and there's truth and evidence to this, and I've experienced it time and time again. I am not saying in any way that we should ignore the mind or that the mind is insignificant.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The mind should not be in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
In most cases.
Mm-hmm.
There are times when you need organization and the mind might take over driving. But the heart must be
with
the main core.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It must be the main core. And this is where, and you know, one thing that that proves this, that why the mind controls so much, is the internet. The internet is not necessarily about the heart. Sometimes we get our feelings in about this, and mm-hmm. we're on a site, but most of the internet is about the mind. And so this is why, you know, the heart is so important, because our society is, you know, so much dictating around the mind.
You travel around really so many countries. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you didn't saw. You see, you were in India, in
Australia,
Vietnam,
Egypt,
Egypt, all the Balkans, Israel, everything, mm-hmm. everywhere. And you will travel for the next time in 40 countries. 14 countries and 18 cities.
Yes. Wow. For the next 3 months.
From here,
I'm going to North Macedonia, yes.
And do you see a country or people that follow more the heart than other? Can you say in this area in the world the people are more connected with the heart than in other countries?
I just spent my time in Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the Philippines, I was in Malaysia and Vietnam. And I have to say, and I want to go to other parts of Asia, I have to say that people follow more their heart in those countries.
In South Asia.
In Southeast Asia. And I have to say, the countries that are wealthier tend to focus more on the mind,
yeah,
and less on the heart. The countries that are not as advanced,
mm-hmm,
focus on the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And which means that they're closer connected to their spirit,
yeah,
than those who have so much,
mm-hmm,
because
yeah,
they don't need. So they feel they don't really need. The heart is a minor thing. You know, it's going to get in the way and I don't want to be emotional. You know,
mm-hmm,
the mind is designed to balance and help balance the heart. That's the importance of the mind. The mind is helped to give the heart its balance to not be 100, because it can't be just one or the other. But the mind helps to give balance to the emotion of the heart.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
We could speak for hours and hours, but I think
we have to finish.
I think it's time, isn't it?
Oh,
but
so
we have so many questions.
Yeah,
I don't know,
yeah,
we want to continue or what do you think? It's more than an hour or... No, because...
Okay, yeah, that's too long, yeah. Maybe
because we could speak for an hour about all this
and
topic.
Next time journeys will come back to Berlin. And I have so many questions now.
But I have one question before then. I want to ask you something. But you think you can have to be too rich material?
To be rich, okay.
To be rich in a
materialistically,
materialistically,
mm-hmm,
brings you away from the connection with your heart and with your spirit.
In no way am I saying being materialistically stable and rich is bad. In no way. What tends to happen is that when there is heavy materialism in life or monetary, there is a self-sufficiency that lends itself to be more in control. And control connects to the mind. Okay? So in no way am I saying is it a bad thing or damaging thing to have wonderful materialism, to have that and to have lots of it. But a person has to work harder to really connect to the heart. When the material is very strong, people have to work much harder to be connected to the heart because they have access to so much. And access to so much means control.
They have to control.
And control
so much,
and when you have control, control connects to the mind.
Yeah, control.
So that's what it's about. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad thing. It's not about being. It's not about bad or anything. It's just you have to work that much harder.
Oh my God, it's so interesting. I could ask now for hours. You know me. Yeah. I can ask for hour for hour. But I think we have to finish. We have to finish, but we have a tradition in our podcast. We have a tradition. Okay, you already did, but you already did. You did a lot, but I ask because we always say that we ask our guests to give some advice or some inspiration to our listeners that they can take with them and to take it in their heart and like a friend that can take it, you know, in the daily journey life with them and think about it. Or more than think about it, what we learned today, to feel about it.
Well, if there's one thing I would say,
please.
I would say, I think it's important, and it's not about rules, but I think it's important that we all learn to listen to our hearts.
To listen to our hearts.
And try our best. Because what happens, we hear from our heart. And then the mind comes in to rationalize it. And move it in one way, one direction or the other. But sometimes because the heart is way out there. I mean like way out in the crazy world. And sometimes we have to be in that, let it be. So if I had one thing to say is learn, I think it's important that we learn to listen.
It's, Derek, it's very, very beautiful. Can I ask you something? Because, you know, when you pray or when you make a meditation, the most thing that you hear is your mind, you know, the voices in your mind. Can you give some inspiration? How speak the heart to you? Is it feeling? Is it a warming feeling?
I got something some time ago. It didn't come from me. It came from the spirit.
Okay.
Even though this is not required, I want to share what was given to me. Close your eyes. Quiet your mind and still your heart.
Still your heart.
I mean, when you still something, it's like when the water simmers down to nothing. Mm-hmm. Close your eyes. Quiet your mind.
That's a problem. Quiet your mind.
Quiet your mind.
A challenge, not a problem.
Still
a challenge.
Not only a challenge.
Okay, quiet your mind.
And still your heart.
And still your heart.
Because the heart can work against you. Because it has to have a balance. Yeah. Everything is about balance.
Yeah, okay.
Everything is about balance.
So nice. Also, we repeat. Quiet your mind.
Close your eyes first. Because it's distractions.
Distractions.
It's about the distraction of what we see.
So close your eyes. Quiet your mind. and still your heart. Oh, beautiful.
And listen.
Beautiful.
And you will listen. You will listen.
Then you will hear.
And if I had one other thing, if I had one other suggestion, I would recommend, even though people that have issues with nudity, I recommend every person I meet, find somewhere where you can do an art class and pose.
I would love to do this.
I will tell you what I learned. For 9 hours a day, I was completely quiet, mm-hmm. completely mm-hmm. listening,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
completely still,
yeah.
Yeah.
and completely naked.
And you earn also money. This is perfect.
My modeling, was actually my best therapist.
Nah,
it was my best therapist.
Yeah.
I got so much healing. We can talk about that another time during those years.
But you can do it also as an old man like me.
Anyone. Yeah. Any person, most schools, I mean, definitely in America, I can't speak of other countries, but where art is like Paris, yes.
Yeah.
But the models come on in all shapes, sizes.
Oh my
people only
God.
Think the people with the best body. You want to know the three people that are models the most?
The people
that get the most work as models are people that are very muscular.
Yeah.
Those who are extremely skinny and those who are very overweight.
Oh, and I'm between.
They get the most work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if someone has something very unique, whether it be their hair, whether it be their skin color, whether it be tattoos, or you know,
your
hair, for example.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Hey, Derek, I just can say really thank you so much. It's so many things, and you give to us, to our listeners, so many nice inspiration. I thank you so much that you were here, and I hope you come back.
I would love to.
Bye, Derek.
Thank you. It was a great time with you.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much,
my dear. I say now bye to you in English, but then I switch in German, and I wanna say, gut, dass unsere Gäste immer sehr gut und sehr lange und sehr schön sprechen können, damit wir sehr gut zuhören können.
Ja.
Und ich freue mich auf unsere letzte Folge, die wir bald haben werden.
Mhm.
Die letzte Folge für diese zweite Staffel. Und sage dir danke, Christina.
Ich danke dir, Roberto.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Zwischen Defekt und Exzellenz.